Support for today's broadcast comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com. Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name-brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL, Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, Computers in You. It's a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. And today, we welcome back to the program science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg also writes two columns for the newspapers about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuits section of the paper. One is a question and answer column, the other a column featuring interesting websites. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions. Here are the telephone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Hi, Celeste. Good to be here.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
It's been a while since you've been here. Good to see you. Well, recently here this week, Bill Gates has been in the news on the technology page. What's the latest from Microsoft?
Well, Microsoft has apparently finally got religion on the antivirus, anti-spyware thing. So they have made available an anti-spyware program that I guess you could say kind of rivals things like SpyBot and Adaware. That's up in a beta or a test version now. They are going to finish it off and make it available, according to Bill Gates, this week for free later this year. So that's a nice thing to hear. They're also working on antivirus software as opposed to anti-spyware software that the rumor is they'll have done, or at least a version of it, out later this year as well. They're going to make you buy that. So that's a thing you might be looking at, though, as opposed to something like Norton Antivirus or McAfee Antivirus. The two big players right now are something smaller like AVG Antivirus. And Microsoft, Bill Gates also said this week, is going to put out later this year at least a beta or a test version of Internet Explorer 7, which is supposed to be a more secure version of Internet Explorer that they're eventually going to make available by itself, unbundled from a new version of Windows, largely, I think, in response to the fact that a lot of these security problems that occur now are related to flaws, security flaws in Internet Explorer 6.
Yeah. So, how long does it take something to go from beta to final product?
It really is variable. Sometimes it can take years for that to happen. In this case, it appears that Microsoft is going to have that anti-spyware done not too long from now. We're talking a matter of months, I think. And the new version of Internet Explorer, I think they're thinking at least by next year you'll probably see a final version of that. Yeah. So, and a lot of times, they say beta, test version, but a lot of times, in fact, beta software is pretty darn good. It's pretty darn finished. And that appears to be the case with their spyware program, which you can find, incidentally, at www.microsoft.com/spyware. From what I read, now I haven't downloaded and tried it myself at this point. From what I read, it's a pretty good product at this point. But again, doesn't catch everything in the same way that free programs like SpyBot and Adaware don't catch everything. So you're probably better off using them in conjunction with each other rather than thinking that you're going to get an all-purpose suite. Yeah.
Okay. We've got a listener ready to talk with us this afternoon on the toll-free line. Line 4, where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Indiana.
Okay.
What interests me, and I don't know if you can answer it or whether or not it's even important, but the recent break into that Georgia database, that's, I guess, the last thing I heard is about 140,000, 145,000 people.
Uh-huh.
Identifications, quote-unquote, have been taken. Number one question, is there any way, I mean, the person trying to find out where these data places are to find out whether you actually have data of mine there.
Right.
So if something happens, you say, well, I don't have to worry about that because mine's with, you know, D. I'm not in the C group. And I wonder if that can be answered. Secondly, as my understanding is, there's only one state that requires notification, and California, and presumably this outfit in Georgia is going to take it upon them to spend lots of money to notify everybody else by letter. And that's 145,000 letters. That's a lot of money. And I sort of wonder if there are people check on these things after this happens, whether or not they actually did what they said they were going to do. I could see them sending to certain states, you know, where there might be a legal outfit might be more apt to do something in regards to this sort of thing rather than another state, which, you know, not going to worry about it. And the third thing, what does it have to do with me? You know, if I don't get a letter, I presume that I wasn't in the group, but I really don't know. I mean, how do I know? Who, I mean, is this one of these Bush things where you guys volunteered to do this and everything be okay? I'd just like to know something about it.
Right. Well, you know, you're asking me something that only has a little bit to do with personal computing, and frankly, I don't know the answers to most of your questions there. Let me say this. Let's bring it back to personal computing here, okay? What can you do to limit your exposure, I think, is really the thing you're asking that may relate to things you do on your computer and things you do online. Really, it comes down to this. You can be circumspect about the sites you plug in your personal information, like you know, your name, address, phone number, social security number, although I don't know particularly in commercial transactions too many times why you'd have to put in your social security number, your credit card numbers, obviously. The same thing goes for bank account numbers, obviously. And you want to make very sure that when you're putting in particularly information like your credit card numbers or your bank account numbers, that you are dealing with a legitimate business that you know is not going to misuse those. And if you're very concerned about it, you may want to have talked to them prior to putting that information in there about what they do to secure it or to look for, as you'll often find on their sites, information about what they do to secure that kind of information. And then if you're uncomfortable with how they handle it, don't use that business. Don't use that website. You want to make sure it's a secure website too. I assume by now most people know, but let's say it anyway, just to reinforce it. You know, there are secure websites and there are unsecure websites, and generally you should see a little padlock in your browser, and that padlock should be locked, indicating that you're at a secure site before you go putting in anything sensitive like credit card information or your bank account numbers.
Yeah, and I imagine that we're going to see more reporting on this story because it's it just broke last day or two, right?
Yeah,
and I think that the state attorneys general across the United States are pretty interested in this.
It's a worrisome thing. It goes beyond the bounds of people's personal computing habits and the security problems they might cause themselves in that way, because we're talking about, you know, giant national databases that store consumer information from all over being broken into. And, it concerns me as well.
Yeah. So. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 1. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon and enjoy the program. I'm working with Windows XP. And I'd like to install some programs on a somewhat temporary basis. And when I decide to take them off the computer, does Windows XP have everything I need to try to get them, you know, completely cleaned off the hard drive? Or do I need to buy some aftermarket uninstall program to do a good job?
Right. Generally speaking, I'll say two things about that. One is most programs, although not all, will come with their own uninstall program, right? And if that's the case, it's generally the best idea to use that the program's individual uninstall program to take it off, because it's designed to get if it's a good software provider, it's designed to specifically to get rid of all the pieces. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that yes, Windows XP, you know, where on your control panel, if you go to your start menu control panel, you know, add remove programs on there. That's a little program okay. in your control panel. The Windows XP version of this is improved over past versions of Windows. In fact, it's improved enough that although there still are, third-party, non-Microsoft uninstall programs that you can get, some of the big ones have just folded because the Windows XP add remove programs system is pretty good. Norton, for example, doesn't sell its clean sweep program that was an uninstall program, and doesn't include it in its utility suite anymore.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Other questions are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. If you've got a question about computers and computing, give us a call. Greg Klein is our guest this afternoon. He's the science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. We have a listener waiting for us on the toll-free line. Line 4, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've got a kind of a two-phase thing here. Hopefully you can help me with. I've got a computer. It's about 6 years old. It's got a 12-gig hard drive, which I have got filled to about 86%, according to the thing. It's not running real, real well. And so one of the things that I tried to do was to I use Windows XP Professional, and I tried to click and have it compress the files.
Uh-huh.
Since I did that, if I try to print a digital image from our digital camera on the off the hard drive, it tells me it's only going to print it at 150 dpi or less, which is certainly not photo grade and not what it used to print.
No.
I tried to uncompress the files, and now I've got my hard drive almost completely locked up. And nothing seems to be functioning very well. So, one, I'm wondering what kind of suggestions you have, because I don't know whether to try to invest the money in a new computer or get an external hard drive and try to, you know, buy some time and some space that way. And can you think of anything I can do so I can actually print my photos at photo quality?
Well, I'm not, and this is something I'd have to look into, and it sounds like an interesting thing to approach in mm-hmm. my column. But so I'm not entirely certain why you would no longer be able to print your photos at a higher resolution, particularly after they were uncompressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in your question in more of a general sense, okay. Yeah, your hard drive is probably approaching too full, okay? And when your computer is doing work, a lot of times, you know, it creates temporary files. Sometimes in the case of, it might be with photos and some things, that those are pretty big temporary files.
Uh-huh.
And it needs space on the hard drive to be able to do that without doing a lot of thrashing and shuffling around, right?
Uh-huh.
So if your hard drive is very nearly full, you've got a lot more work that has to be done to get the things done that you want done behind the scenes there.
Right.
And that's why you're really getting sluggish performance. The other reason why you're probably getting really sluggish performance is that your computer is 6 years old, and we do at home, it's collected a lot of junk and stuffed it in closets over the time you've been using it, and again, that's you know making it hard to find the things that it needs and to do the things that you want it to do, right?
Right.
I try
to run the disk cleanup on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and I defrag it on a regular basis. So,
and that's good, but at some point, you know, the fact is you just don't have much room left, right?
Right.
So, and you need to have a certain amount of space. There are all kinds of rules of thumb, and I don't know, how many are – I don't know. I've never really decided which are the best and which are not. But, you know, some people say 10% of your hard drive ought to be free. You know, some people say more than that. So the fact is you do need at least some free space so that those activities can go on in the background that go on, that write temporary files, particularly to your hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing I'll say is, okay, you have a 6-year-old computer, and you probably know as well as I know that in computer years, 6 years is a long, long time, right?
Yep.
And you're running Windows XP Pro, which is the most modern operating system from Microsoft you can get right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, you're trying to run the most modern operating system on an older computer, and that's not going to give you the best performance either. So those are the things I'd say unspecifically about the question you asked, and I'll look into the question of, okay, why when you compress those photos, do they now, even when you uncompress them, only print at a low resolution like that?
Okay,
I'll look into that and approach it in my column.
And pardon?
And approach it in my column.
Okay.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right. Thanks
a lot for your help.
Next, we talk with a listener on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just wondered if you could recommend vendors to repair a PC and remove a virus or viruses.
Where do you live?
We live in St. Joseph.
In St. Joseph. Okay, so you're around here then. I don't think I want to recommend specific vendors, but if you get out your phone book and you look in there, you'll find out that, you know, there are some local PC shops here. There, in fact, there are a couple of guys who'll be listed in there that under some heading like PC doctor or something like that. Okay. Those are the kind of folks you might want to think about giving a call and seeing what they can do for you.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Thanks.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions are invited, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. A listener is waiting for us on line two. Hi.
Hello. I had a quick question. Is there anywhere that's got a table that I can compare the various processor speeds? I mean, like, they're starting to use names like Simperon, Athlon, Duralon. It's hard to tell which is which, and, you know, what's faster than another, or compare it to P4 speeds.
Yeah.
Is there a table somewhere I can look it up on? Or?
Well, off the top of my head, I can't tell you right. Here, this will solve your problem, all right? But let me tell you a couple of good places to look at that, okay? There's a site called, and if you'll Google these, you'll find them, and I'm going to do it here to try and come up with the addresses myself, but Tom's Hardware Guide, are you familiar with that?
Haven't heard of it.
Tom's Hardware Guide. They'll tell you a lot about more than you probably want to know about various things in your computer, but I think you can find many comparisons of different types of chips in there, okay, and discussion of them. And that's www.tomshardware, no apostrophe in that, and it's one word, .com, okay?
Okay.
And
thank you very much.
One other is an Antec. And I'm finding that for you here. If you go to www.anandtech.com, that's another place for a hardware analysis and news site.
Okay, you said AND or?
Yeah, it's www.anandtech. Anandtech, all one word, .com.
All righty.
Those are a couple of when I want to know about, when I want to see hardware comparisons and know details on what different chips do and don't do, those are places that I go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Will these sites also give you information about other all components
kinds,
of the
all kinds of
computer?
Components, yeah. You want to know about video cards, you want to know about sound cards, just all kinds of things. Great resources.
If you've got a question about computers this afternoon, you can give us a call and talk to Greg Klein, and he'll help you out. This is The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. No one waiting at the moment, so if you've got a question, now's the time. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and 800-222-WILL. Caller one or two back mentioned having a problem with cleaning up a virus or viruses, and I know that... There have been a couple roaming out there this week. What's the latest? And maybe just a little information here about how to keep yourself protected, manage your risk.
There's a kind of another rampant variant of My Doom going around, and that's a virus that harvests your address book and uses the addresses in it to propagate itself, as well as uses your computer to go out on the web and find addresses to send itself to, so that it can spread itself around. I suppose if I said two things about protecting yourself, and there are a number of things you can do, but I'd tell people in particular, if you use, and so many people do, Outlook Express, Microsoft's Outlook Express, that's their free email program. Mm-hmm. There are two things you should open it up and do right now, okay? One is go to the Tools menu, Options, and the Read tab, and check Read All Messages in Plain Text, okay? So all I'll warn you that if people send you, for example, email that's formatted as a web page, mm-hmm. you're not going to see all the nice little things they put in there. All you're going to get is the message, right? But you're also turning off potential problems. You're giving plain text cannot activate itself and do something you don't want it to do on your computer. So that's why I really suggest that it's a good idea for people to especially if you're using Outlook Express. To limit it to plain text. The other thing is to go to the View menu of Outlook Express, go to Layout, and uncheck Show Preview Pane. That means that what you're going to get is a list of messages unopened, and they're not going to automatically display on another part of your screen. You're going to have to double-click them to open them up. And again, this allows you to look at messages, you look at the subject lines, you can tell it's not stuff from anybody you know that you wanted, and you can delete it without doing anything else with it and save yourself some potential problems.
So it's like going through your email with rubber gloves.
Right. Which, unfortunately, we kind of have to do these days.
Okay. Let's talk with some more listeners. Next, we go to a listener on line 4, the toll-free line. Where are you calling from?
Point County.
Okay.
Excuse me. A couple of quick things. Just from what you said, you was talking about go to Tools and then what else to get to the plain text?
You're using Outlook Express,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And hopefully they haven't changed this much between versions. You should be able to go to Tools,
mm-hmm.
Options.
Mm-hmm.
You should see a Read tab.
Okay.
And then you'll see some checkboxes. And one of those checkboxes is Read All Messages in Plain Text.
Okay.
And you want to check that.
Okay. And then the View messages, you said to go to uncheck the...
Yeah, you want to go to View Layout, and then you want to uncheck Show Preview Pane.
Okay, explain that why, because I like it personally that way. I thought that if you have it that way, then it actually doesn't bring in anything. Or is it like double-clicking it if you leave the preview...
In some cases, it may be. like you're opening that that message, and that's why I suggest that.
Oh, okay.
Actually, that's a low risk thing, but there is some risk there. So.
Okay. Now, my main question, the reason I actually called, and I won't keep it long, or at least I'll ask the question. I may have to hang up. You've talked about spyware before, and I have Windows 98. And I tried to download and was SpyBot or one of the two. I had difficulty because it showed up the stuff for anything that was after 98. Any suggestions on that? Or
now, could you say that again? It did what after 98?
Everything that the spyware that showed up was for 2000 and newer.
Hmm. Well,
is there any way I can find stuff for 98, Windows 98?
Now, I know that SpyBot has a version that works with Windows 98 because I used to run it on a Windows 98 computer myself.
Okay.
And you know, you may want to go to their site, which is www.safer-networking.org. /EN, that gives you the English version of the page.
Safer?
Yes, it's safer-networking.org, and then /EN.
Okay, all right.
And make sure there's probably a link there. I don't have that page right in front of me, but there's probably a link there that takes you to download and make sure that you're downloading a version that will work with Windows 98.
Okay.
Now, Adware, the other one,
I
don't remember whether they have a Windows 98 version or not, but I think they do too.
Okay.
It may just be, though, that they have different links to different versions.
Okay.
And you want to make sure you're getting the link to the version.
Okay. Do you have their web address by chance?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'll appreciate that.
That's www.lavasoft.usa. That's all one word.
Okay.
Lava, like the stuff that comes out of a volcano, softusa.com.
Okay.
/software. Mm-hmm. /AdAware. AdAware. AdAware.
Okay. It's AdAware, okay.
AdAware, right.
Okay.
And in that case, it's just AdAware, one word, but the program is actually ad-aware. And you want to be somewhat careful of that to make sure you're getting ad-aware and not AdAware, because AdAware is something else and they want money.
Okay, all right. Because one of the things was somebody sent me a page and I went through, and then they would come up with different the web address, and that scared me because I want to make sure I had the right information because there are so many lookalikes.
Right,
Okay.
You're good to be careful.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Good luck. And by the way, later today, what we'll do is all the websites that Greg has mentioned will have links on our webpage on the Afternoon Magazine. So if you need to check back in, you can go there. Also, you know, the programs that we do with Greg and Peter Kimball are in the archives on our website. So if you think back and you go, well, wait a minute, what was the advice? Okay, you can listen back, and our website is will.uiuc.edu. Next, we're going to talk with a listener on line two. Hello.
I have a question about my internet performance. I'm running Windows XP, and we have a modem connection, dial-up connection, and I'm running SpyBot, Norton, and recently my performance has just gone to nothing where I can connect to the web, but I can't really open any websites. It takes like 10 minutes for them to download.
Hmm. And where do you live?
In Champaign.
In Champaign. And have you, you know, recently installed SpyBot and Norton, or have you always had them running on there?
I've had Norton running for about probably 4 or 5 months, mm-hmm. and haven't had any connection problems or downloading problems. And I just recently installed SpyBot, but it was after I was having the problems because I thought maybe it was some spyware or adware that was causing it. but I'm still having those issues.
So you really don't think that Norton or SpyBot have caused the problem?
No.
And SpyBot shouldn't, and now Norton should be active and, you know, monitoring like your email and
right.
other things you do on your computer all the time. SpyBot,
right.
you can get it to do that, but it doesn't by default do that automatic monitoring. It's you have to call it up and run it. So
okay.
you should it shouldn't affect that. Is your internet provider local?
Yes. Yes.
Now, have you talked to them about this?
I have not. No.
Okay.
It's just a recent problem.
Yeah.
Just within the last week or so that this has happened, and prior to that, I didn't have any problems.
Does the connection doesn't drop either? It's just slow. Is that right?
It's incredibly slow.
Yeah. Now that would seem to if you're getting connection drops, then I'd say there may be a problem on your phone line. This is a dial-up
right.
connection, right? Yeah.
Right.
What I've
noticed recently, and this may have always been going on, but I'm not sure, is that there's a little icon in my taskbar on the right that pops up just after I connect.
Uh-huh.
It's like a little Earth with a Microsoft logo on top of it, and it's downloading something. When I roll over it, it has like 2% downloaded or 4%. But I can't click on it. I can't see what it is or what it's doing.
You can't.
And
I
noticed that the performance dropped as soon as that popped up.
Yeah. Well, that'd make sense if something's downloading something in the background. Now, can you right click on it and?
No, I can't do anything with it. And as soon as I disconnect, it goes away.
Stumped. I don't know whether that would. Now that sounds like a logical. And you didn't have this before. You didn't see this before.
I didn't notice it. It might have been there.
It might
but
have
I'm
been
not
there.
Sure.
Well, that makes that. It's kind of hard to pin it on that then.
Yeah.
You haven't done anything that in the past you might not have had. Say automatic win. Have you upgraded Windows recently? What version of Windows are you running?
XP.
XP. Did you install Service Pack 2?
You know what? I don't remember. I think I did a while back.
Well, see, that may be one of the features of Service Pack that's turned on in Service Pack 2 it'll automatically go out and get updates to Windows, okay? So
okay.
instead of running, Windows Update, it does it for you, right? This is supposed mm-hmm. to make Windows more secure by downloading all the security
right,
patches.
Right, yeah, because it used
to
say, would
download,
you like to update?
Yeah.
And now it just does it automatically. Okay.
Right. So if it's doing that automatically, that could very well be your problem because that thing's going out and downloading all the patches to various pieces of Windows while you're trying to do all the other things you're trying to do online over a dial-up connection. All right.
So is there any way to disable that?
I think if you call up the Windows Update program, mm-hmm. if you go to your Start menu and call up like Windows Update, you should find a preference setting there that allows you to turn off automatic updates.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try that.
And that sounds like a likely culprit.
Okay. So. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Then should this listener from time to time make certain that he does the patches and the updates?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the drawback that's the, is you have
yeah.
to do it yourself.
Yeah.
But over a slow dial-up connection like that, if in fact this is what the problem is, he's got that's automatically turned
mm-hmm.
on now. I mean, he's trying to download patches for Windows while he's, getting his email,
sure.
surfing the web and all of that. And that might be fine if you were working on a broadband connection. You might have plenty of pipeline to do that in. But over a dial-up connection like that, that would definitely bring things to a crawl.
So if you're manually then looking for your updates and your patches, you want to do that once a week? Or what would your recommendation be?
I would think that once a week is sufficient for most people, but it kind of depends on your computing habits. If you're a risk taker online, for example, you might want to do stuff like that more often. But I would think that once a week, even once a month, you know, if everybody did it once a month, we'd all be ahead of the ahead of the game. So
okay, let's talk with another listener, caller on line 3. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
My name is Jonathan. I'm calling from Indianapolis.
Okay.
Wow.
I caught you guys totally by accident. I was just kind of scanning through and thought I would I'd give you a call. I actually have a secondhand computer that's the second computer in the home. It's a Gateway Millennium Edition Windows and running Firefox on it, which I like much better. I'm going to use it for my wife, for her to do some things.
Uh-huh.
I have a question. It came from a relative who just, you know, pretty much gave it to me, and I'm trying to get rid of, you know, old fragments or pieces of maybe programs that weren't fully uninstalled. And also, too, it's only got 128 megabytes of RAM, and it's run about, on average, between 65 and 70% as far as, you know, available. And just wondered how I can, you know, try to check that just to see maybe if there's something in the background that's, you know, I'm on a DSL Pro through my local SBC phone company, which is about twice the speed. I think it's 3.3 as far as the speed goes. So uh-huh. I just want to try to speed it up the best I can and get rid of the slag if I could.
So you've got a broadband connection, a DSL connection, right?
Correct.
And the problem is you're seeing a lag when you start loading a page. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, if I go to ESPN and, you know, download,
right,
you know, sports clips, whatever, I mean, if you pull up the internet connection, you'll see the little blue bar that goes across as it's, you know, downloading. I mean, it's cruising,
right,
and the videos play fine. It's just, I don't know whether it's the Firefox that is, you know, the Mozilla Firefox, which
uh-huh.
is something different than, you know, the Internet Explorer. I mean, I have both. And I copied over all the favorites to the other one. I
right.
loaded them on there. But I don't know whether that has anything to do with it or not, since it's, you know, there's different plugins that you need for certain things on Firefox or not.
Right. Do you not see this with Internet Explorer?
Not as much.
Yeah.
But it seems like the certain pages load faster on Firefox than on
right.
Internet Explorer, depending on whether the page is designed specifically for IE. It may load quicker than one that's not, and
right.
a generic page may load quicker on Firefox.
That's what I was going to tell you. I don't think you're seeing a problem with your DSL connection, and
okay.
I don't think there's really much you can do to speed it up in a significant way. There are settings you can go in and tweak, you know, and if you Google that, you'll find all kinds of suggestions. But generally, I've messed around with those, and I don't find a whole lot of difference. I think what you're seeing has to do with the way the various web pages are designed, and probably with traffic on the internet too at various times. You know, whether that site is getting hit a lot, and what the traffic conditions are like between you and the place you're trying to get, that kind of
yeah.
thing. But probably more what you're seeing is it has to do with the design of the page. And in cases where you might see it load faster in Internet Explorer, for example, than maybe in Firefox, I think that probably has to do, and you know, see this with some frequency, with the page designer using, you know, Microsoft-specific technology instead
yeah.
of sticking with open web standards.
And sometimes I'll pull it up and, you know, where a picture or something is supposed to be, it will either have just like a little QuickTime logo or a little X in the corner, and the picture won't load on
yeah.
Firefox.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that has to do with it or not, but I guess, is there a way that I can check to see specifically what programs, because this was a fairly computer proficient person, I guess, that just got rid of the computer, but there may be a lot of programs on there that are taking up memory that I would like to have back that I
uh-huh.
don't need. Is there a way I can go and check and see what specifically, how much is taking, you know, memory from, you know, for while it's running, either in the background or just so I can maybe delete some of those?
Well, you're running Windows XP, right?
No, Millennium Edition.
Millennium Edition.
It's a Celeron 733.
It's
an old gateway.
Still, I think you should be able to hit this will give you some idea of some of that stuff. If you hit Control-Alt-Delete, you know, you should get the task manager up there, and there should be a viewer that lets you look at what processes are going on in the background.
Yeah.
That should be one of the options. And if you look at that, you can kind of go down the list and see what's taken up a lot of resources and what's not.
Well, I've done that, and it doesn't tell you specifically line by line whether, you know, one – and so some of the words on there or the abbreviations, I don't know what they are.
Right.
I really don't. I don't know whether it's something crucial or not, and it doesn't tell you specifically line by line which one's taking up the most memory. It does list them, but it doesn't tell you – you know, which one is saying take up the most memory, and I don't know how to find out what those mean.
Right.
It could be like VETXMX or something. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any idea. I know I want to delete it and just, you know, see, have a nice day, and that'd be the end of it. I mean, I don't know what it is.
Right.
I don't know if there's a way to find that out. If you do a search for it.
Again, I'd go, you know, if you want to delve into this, go to Google, type in something like Windows processes list or something like that, and you'll find sites that will tell you try and translate some of that cryptic stuff that you see in there.
Okay.
But to be honest with you, I don't know that it's worth it for you to go through all this pain, because I don't think you're going to get the gain out of it that makes it worth it. I think your computer's probably running okay. It is running Windows ME. I'll be honest with you, Windows ME was probably the worst version of Windows, you know, since version 1 and 2.
I think I have 98 second edition on an old Sony Vaio laptop that has an external hard drive and a external CD-ROM, and it works better than the Millennium Edition.
Well, I think that's a general that's an opinion that a lot of people share. But that said, you know, Windows ME is functional. I think your DSL connection is probably fine, and when you're seeing these delays and things like broken images. You're seeing that because those particular websites have used proprietary Microsoft technology instead of open web standards, and therefore they don't work exactly right in browsers like Firefox comply with open web standards.
And it was free, so what can I do, right?
Yeah. I mean, at least Firefox didn't cost anything. And look at it this way. So maybe you don't see a little picture and it takes a couple extra seconds to load a web page. You're a lot less exposed to problems with spyware and viruses and that kind of thing, which are going to save you headaches and time, and, you know, time is money. So
there were articles that said that the Department of Homeland Security, the internet division of that, was recommending that people go to a non-Windows type of, you know, environment, i.e. Firefox, just so that, you know, we could avoid that. I mean, and so I'm safe with that. I like that much better.
Yeah.
So, all right, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Boy, you know what? We're right here at the end of the time.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, we went right through.
Quickly. I'm sorry we don't have any time to take any more calls, but maybe you would give your email address, so if people have a question, then maybe you can handle their question in your column.
I want to do that and do two other things real quick.
Okay.
One is the guy that asked about disabling automatic update. If you go to Control Panel, System and Properties, now this is in Windows XP, you should find the place to do that, so you can disable automatic Windows updates. Then the fellow that called about, you know, needing help, somebody with reinstalling a system, cleaning up a virus, you know, I suggested some 4PEG people he might use. But another thing he could do is go to www.cug.org. That's the website for the Champaign-Urbana Computer Users Group, okay? There are a lot of savvy computer folks in that group, and I'm sure you might be able to find one there who maybe for a couple of beers and a pizza might be able to handle that problem for you. And then my email address is Kline, KLINE, and @, and then news-gazette.com.
Okay. And again, listeners, I'll get these links up on. I'll put these as links on our webpage for the Afternoon Magazine on our website, WILL.UIUC.edu. And if people go to the newspaper's website, can they find you on there? Is there an email directory?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I should be on there in one way or another.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks so much for coming in and helping out our listeners.
All right. My pleasure.
Greg Klein has been our guest this afternoon on our monthly discussion about computers. And Greg is the science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. This program, Computers and You, is something we do once a month here on the Afternoon Magazine on the third Thursday of the month. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in from the Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. At the Chicago Board of Trade, a big day in the bean pit this afternoon. Futures finish the day. Get this. We haven't seen numbers like this for a long time, at least to the upside. 17 cents higher in the March contract than the new crop November. We're up 19 and three quarters. Why, you might ask at this point? Well, it appears that they're believing that dry conditions in deep southern Brazil will have an impact on the number of bushels that come out of that nation as they harvest the crop, even as we speak, this season. Now, let's begin in the wheat pit for the day. The March contract at 297 high, low at 293. Settlement price at 295 and a half, up 3 cents for the day. May futures 304 and three quarters the high, the low at $3.50. Settled 303 and a quarter. They were up 3.5. I'm guessing that those numbers probably can best be described as spillover from the bean pit. July futures 312, the high, the low at 308. Settlement price at 311, up 4.5. And September wheat 317.5, the high, the low at 314 and a quarter. Settlement price 316.5. They were up 5.25 for the day. The March corn $2 even, the high, the low at $1.98. Couldn't settle above or even at $2 for the day. $1.99 and a quarter. The settlement price up $2, or rather up 2.25 cents for the day. May futures 207.5. The high, the low at 205.5. Settlement price at $2.07, up 2.75. And the July 214.5. The high, the low at 212.5. Settled $2.14, up 2.5. September futures 221.75. The high, the low at 220.25. Settlement price 221.5, up 2.25. And the December futures 231 and three quarters, the high, the low at 230, settlement price at 231, up 2 for the day. And March futures 238 and three quarters, the high, the low at 237.5, and a settlement at 238, up 2. March oats for the day 158.5, the high, the low at 156, a settlement price of 156.5. They were down a quarter, and the May futures unchanged today. 154, the high, the low at 151 and three quarters. Settlement price in the May oats unchanged at 152. Now here come the numbers from the soy complex. March beans, they were up 17 cents today. 552, the settlement price, a high of 553, a low at 538 and three quarters. May futures 554, the high, the low at 539. Settlement price at 553, up 18 and a quarter. A lot of technical buying going on today as the funds and others were hitting some buy stops in on the way up and some sell stops to get rid of some shorts as well in this bean market, and that probably pushed this bean a little higher than it may have gone otherwise. Also, a tale of caution. They are talking about dry weather in southern Brazil, but you might recall that in northern Brazil, of course, what they call northern Brazil, is Mato Grosso, which is the largest bean-producing state in that nation, and that has not been noted to be dry as of yet. We'll probably learn more later this afternoon when we talk to Peter Levitt during the closing market report. He's agricultural meteorologist for us on Thursdays. July beans, 557, the high, the low at 541.5. Settlement price 556 and a quarter, up 19 and a quarter. August futures 560, the high, the low at 543.5. Settlement price at 559.5, up 21 and a quarter. In September futures 554, the high, the low at 552. Settlement price at 554. They were up 12 and three quarters. And November contract in the bean pit for the day settled like this for the new crop. 568, the high, low at 551.5, a settlement price at 566.5, up 19 and three quarters. And we'll talk about these numbers today. Boy, I'm glad this happens on a Thursday when we get a chance to talk with Dan Zwicker this afternoon. He turned bullish, actually friendly, I suppose, a couple of weeks ago and then backed off. We'll wait and see what he has to say this afternoon at just about 6 after this next hour, 2 o'clock Central Time. Soybean meal now 172, the high, the low at 164.50. Settlement price at 171.50, up 8.60. And the May meal 170, 150 the high, the low at 163.80. Settlement price at 171.20. They were up 9.20 for the day. And the March Bean Oil, 2010 the high, the low at 1963. Settlement price $19.82, up 26 for the day. And the May Bean Oil, 2025 the high, low at 1973. Settlement price at $19.89. And they finished 23 higher for the day. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange. Celeste?
Okay, well, livestock prices were lower today. Yesterday they were higher, today they're lower. March feeder cattle, 101 even the high, $100.40 the low, $100.62.5 the settlement, that down 10. April, $100.20 the high, $99.50 the low, $99.95 the settlement, that up 12.5. May, 99.07.5 the high, 98.60 the low, 98.85 the settlement, that down 10. February, live cattle, 90.77.5 the high, 90.25 the low, 90.50 the settlement, that unchanged. April, 88.05 the high, 87.17.5 the low, 87.30 the settlement, that down 37.5. April lean hog, 74.35 the high, 73.50 the low, 73.85 the settlement, that down a nickel. May, 75.70 the high, 74.90 the low, 75.60 the settlement, that down 10. June, 78.30 the high, 77.67.5 the low, the settlement 78.10, that down a nickel. July lean hog, 75.05 the high, 74.40 the low, 74.67.5 the settlement, that down 20. February pork bellies, 87.90 the high, 87.30 the low, finishing at 87.60, that was up 7.5. And the Dow down 64 points at 10,771. The NASDAQ off 21 at 2066. The S&P 500 off 8 points at 1203.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Dave Keel from Cedar Rapids, Iowa writes, "Dear Dr. Science, why don't car manufacturers make cars with gasoline filler tubes on both sides of the car?"
They do. But sales of those cars are even worse than the sales of the normal one-tube models. It has to do with the American public's appreciation for impracticality. If someone had the wisdom to make a car with no filler tube, it'd probably sell out overnight. This automotive impracticality has an analog in the fancy restaurant with the lousy food and even lousier service, but that always has a long line to get in the front door. Yes, in America, we celebrate vanity. We embrace the bad idea. We elevate the crackpot to godlike status. If you don't believe me, just look at television.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.